From the trails, woods, and waters of the Great Lakes State to the Michigan Talk Network, it's Wild Michigan with your host, Duran Martinez.
Welcome to Wild Michigan. Duran Martinez, Alex Clark in the studios of the Wild Michigan Talk Network all over the Great Lakes State. Online, podcast, Facebook, Twitter, all that stuff. One location, wildmichiganradio.com. The new website is ever-changing. We got some video stuff on there. We've got some things you can win on there. We've got some links to meet the experts. And it's all brought to you by our friends at Lucky Buck Deer Mineral down in Osseo, Michigan. Some fine folks. Also, the Sportsman's Challenge going on. The Sportsman's Triathlon and Ironman Challenge coming up June 21st, 22nd, up to the UP. We've moved it, and it is going to be over in the Negaunee, Ishpeming area. And we are looking forward to that. Again, it used to be at the Hiawatha, but things have since moved. And it's going to be a big time. Get your team of four together to either participate in the regular or the Ironman Challenge, and this is going to be at the Negaunee Rod and Gun Club and the golf course up there in Negaunee also. It's going to be a great time. And there's a link on our website, wildmichiganradio.com. Also, Scentlock, our good friends over there, and everybody helping us bring this show to you. Some great stuff in the first hour of the show. The Deer Professor, Doug Roberts, also Eddie Salter, talking turkey with us. And right now, going to talk a little fishing because, you know, we like to be well-rounded, and I am well-rounded. David A. Rose, how are you, sir?
Oh, I'm good. You just reminded me of the old, being an old Boy Scout and stuff. They used to always pat their bellies, the leaders, and say, scouting rounds a guy out. You know,
so. It was the beer that, and the cooler that the scout masters had hidden while we were off snipe hunting.
That's right. Now, let's not put any...
It's not a bad thought. It's just the truth. That's all. This is the 70s. Things were different then. Things weren't looked upon badly then.
You know what? You're right.
So, you know, this is not a reflection of today's scouting, okay? Let's just
there you go.
Say that now as I backpedal fiercely on this whole thing. David A. Rose joins us. He is one of the experts on our Meet the Experts page. We have dedicated that to some of our folks that are recurring guests on here and our good friends, shamelessly plugging them and what they do. And, David, the reason for my call is we have been getting some information from the Michigan DNR, and you and I both know that this has been a difficult winter on the fish. A lot of ice, a lot of snow coverage has taken away a lot of the oxygen out of the water, so expect fish kills. And I was over on a retention pond here by the Wild Michigan Talk Network studios, and you know, it's a retention pond. You look at it, you know, an office complex, you don't think anything of it. Well, there was fish in that retention pond. There were bluegill and bass and carp. Well, some of them have done floated up to the top and to the bottom.
It happens every year. Yeah. This year, you just might notice it more just because, now my neck of the woods, Traverse City up here, we've had ice on some of the lakes since deer season.
Right,
November.
Right.
And as soon as that light gets cut, you know, plants start to die off. They no longer creating oxygen. In fact, they can actually produce a noxious gas, and the fish have trouble breathing. And that started a long time ago. But, you know, I don't think it's, you know, it depends on the depth of a lake as to the total kill. I mean, some ponds, I mean, if they're only 5 feet deep, if they were up here, man, they'd be frozen solid. And definitely would have a lot of kill.
You know, and it's one of those things, too. People were seeing them with underwater cameras, you know, like the AquaView. Oh, my gosh, there's fish floated up to the top. Is something gone wrong? Well, no, it's just a natural occurrence. It happens when you have winters like we've had in Lansing area. We've had 5 feet of snow, and then you poo-poo me with the whole thing with your 200-plus inches. Well, Mr. One-Upper.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you what, we still, and I'm talking to you like this week, we still have 2 feet of snow on the ground up here in Traverse City, so... I feel not sorry for you.
Well, anyway. Yeah. You never do. And I don't ever feel sorry for you because you fish all the time.
Oh, yeah, I wish. But anyway, yeah.
But is there a specific, I mean, is it going to be smaller fish, bigger fish, or just fish in general that happen to be in those spots that just can't get out?
Yeah, I'm going to call it survival of the fittest. If you got any kind of weaknesses at all, you're going to be the first to go. So this really is good for fish populations, as you know, you're building up those genetics. The most fit fish wins. And you know, just a quick reminder too, it doesn't even have to be shallow waters. We even saw some of that stuff going on in like the Grand Traverse Bays. East Grand Traverse Bay, for an example, 600 feet deep. It's still frozen with 20 inches of ice right now. Fish bite has been tough at times, and that's due to the lack of dissolved oxygen. So yeah, it happens no matter where and how deep. And I mean, it's part of the whole nature of things. We're kind of a rebirth.
Sure. No, I understand that. David A. Rose is our guest. Wildfishing.com is his website. There's a link on our website, wildmichiganradio.com. Let's talk a little bit about ice fishing safety, David, because recently there was an SUV and a few ATVs that went through the water up in Saginaw Bay.
Uh-huh.
It's just not safe. Okay, let's just, you know what, if you've got to build a bridge to get out to the ice, no.
Yeah, you know, fish are not always worth it. Now, sure, like I just said, Grand Traverse Bay still have 20 inches of ice, but that ice isn't as good as it was a month ago. That ice was solid, blue. Now, we've had a little warm weather, we've had a little sun, we've had a little rain. And guess what? That ice is clouding up. Well, what's that mean? Well, it's like your old ice cubes inside your ice cube tray, I guess. They're getting full of air pockets in there and all sorts of stuff, water running through. So it's not as solid as it once was. Even 20 inches of ice can be dangerous. In fact, I was just reading something here. Ice anglers on Green Bay, wind switched, had to be rescued off of Green Bay, like 15 of them, because, well, the world underneath them moved, you know.
And you get that wind shift, too, on Saginaw Bay or any other big body of water like that. It's gonna do what it's going to do. It's going to break away. You're going to get a nice flow, and here comes the Coast Guard.
Yeah, and then next thing you know, thank goodness for cell phones, I guess, but still, that's no... We don't want to call the Coast Guard. We'll just put it that way.
Yeah, no, it can be quite expensive. What else is going on up in your area? I mean, aside from snow and ice that may or may not be safe.
Exactly. Well, I'll tell you what. Spring is definitely slightly in the air. We, you know, daffodils are poking up through the snow. They're upset, but they're doing it. And that just means that, you know, the bite will occur here pretty soon as waters start to warm up. Oxygen is brought in. Food is brought in into these lakes and stuff like that. Steelhead runs. Hey, we're starting to see a few fresh fish, but still it's semi-winterish up here. And I know a lot of my friends on different rivers around. Yeah, they're getting a fish here and there, but it's not hot and heavy yet. So that's been the thing right now, is just kind of sort your tackle, get all your lures facing the same way in your plain old tackle boxes, and sharpen their hooks and get ready for a spectacular spring.
And that was absolutely shameless on your part, by the way.
Thank you very much.
I love that very much.
Didn't you?
Actually, I need a new tackle box. You know what? I'm going to talk to you about that stuff, about Plano, because a fine company. And you know, I think I need you to help me decide, do I want to go the old school ginormous tackle box, or do I want to go soft side with the compartments now? See, it's time for a change.
It is time for a change, and I'll tell you what, believe it or not, tackle totes, they come in all shapes and forms now, sizes. I mean, you know, and I own too many, there's no doubt, because I have too many lures. And now, you know, I've got like a not a tackle box for every fish, but a tackle box for every occasion. Like, I got one, if I do a fly-in trip up to Canada or something like that, I take that one because it works well for this and that. And you know, hard-sided tackle boxes have their place. So, yeah, it's definitely, you just kind of have to decide and, you know, scratch your chin and pick which one is best for you.
All right, David A. Rose is our guest here. You can find him at wildfishing.com. Hang on, David, if you don't mind. If you've got the time, I want to talk to you more.
Okay.
Find out some of the stuff, you know, find out a little bit about spring, because I'm seeing some steelhead. My friends are getting out fishing. I'm not. They are. And if you've got pictures, you can send them to us. Get on the contact page at wildmichiganradio.com. We're going to come back with David A. Rose right here on Wild Michigan.
I'm Lee Lukowski.
And I'm Tiffany Lukowski from the Crush TV.
And you're listening to Wild Michigan.
to Wild Michigan. Duran Martinez, your host on the Wild Michigan Talk Network. So good to have you along. And in case you're wondering why we use the Miranda Lambert music with Lee and Tiffany, it's a long story. But I'll just say, Lee, Tiffany and Miranda are buds. And got to hang out with them both once. It was cool. But Bill Hawk, you're forever dead to me for that whole thing. Anyway, back. It'll be one of those off-air stories that I'll tell anybody just because. But no, he's a good friend of mine, Bill Hawk. Speaking with David A. Rose here, as I squirrel myself off on the show today. ADD, I've got it, baby. But David A. Rose joins us right now. And David, we were talking about good storage containers. You know, look, everybody, I would guarantee almost everybody I know has got a Plano something, a container of some sort. And now I think it's that time that I kind of maybe expand my two cases. I need to get something new, but you get so overwhelmed sometimes. You know, how do I know what's right for me?
Well, yeah, I'll give it some of my experiences. How's this?
That's perfect.
Okay, so you've got these soft-sided tackle boxes. Plano makes great ones. And, oh, by the way, they're near Chicago, Illinois area. They're not Plano, Texas. Just let everybody know that. They get very confused with that. But anyway, so you've got these nice soft-sided tackle boxes where you can put these different tackle totes in. Now, that might be something good for you where you have a nice size tackle, you know, we'll call it a canvas bag, and then you're able to fill your different totes with different lures for different situations. So let's say you're going to go salmon trolling, you can throw your salmon lures in there. If you know you're going to go walleye fishing, you can put your walleye stuff in a different tote and have those in there. So one bag can kind of really do it all.
You know, I'm looking at some of the things on here, like the lumbar fishing pack,
yeah.
You know, rod tubes, things like that. I don't have a boat, so this isn't something that's going to sit in the boat. And I was kind of thinking off air as we talked, you know, maybe I need like species specific packs. So if I'm going to go bass fishing, this is the one thing where all my bass stuff is in.
Yeah.
You know, or steelhead or ice fishing or something.
Yep. A lot of guys and gals do that. And it works out really well for them because, like you said, they're going to go bluegill fishing. Well, by golly, they can grab that smaller Plano canvas bag and go out. Now, there are still places for that hard-sided tackle box, especially if you're into traveling into some heavy-duty places. That might be, you know, I mentioned earlier, you're going to throw it onto an airplane of, you know, de Havilland Beaver and go up in a fly-in into Canada. Another scenario, ice fishermen. I have a hard-sided small tackle box from Plano that I use. When I went out to Saginaw Bay this year, you know, it took 13 miles to get out, 9.5 miles, and you're going over humps and bumps, you're trying to take it easy. But when I opened up the inside of my shanty, man, it was a shambles. I had a couple things in canvas bags, like a duffel bag and stuff, tore to shreds.
Wow.
So this might be a spot where a hard-sided tackle box comes into play when you're a traveling man, we'll put it that way.
You know, and they have... It's almost, okay, it is overwhelming, the amount of things they have online at PlanoMolding.com. It's absolutely amazing. You can't go into your local big box store or local retailer and see everything.
No, I mean, they have so much stuff, I don't know how a retailer could really carry everything. And that's what's kind of cool. You know, they can really, you know, there are certain items that'll sell better maybe in the South or the North or this or that. And then you haven't even probably looked at the hunting stuff yet.
So. Oh, I've looked at it. I'm focused on fishing right now.
Okay. So what I'm saying is there's a lot of it out there, and it's, you know, it's all really affordable. And, you know, I'm sounds like I'm plugging Plano, and I guess I kind of am because, man, they just got a lot of stuff, and I really, you know, I mean, you can't go wrong with just that one company and all the different things. So, but yeah, just in fishing wise, I mean, it might be one of those things you can, they're affordable enough you can buy two tackle, you know, bags, maybe one hard-sided one, maybe one soft-sided one, get all your tackle and have all these little different totes and everything like that. And really, you're organized.
Now, as much as I'm not into the fishiflage stuff, it might be good for the species specific that I was thinking about. Hey, there's a walleye in this bag. There's my walleye gear.
Yep. The fishiflage, in case anybody doesn't know what that is actual camouflage, but it's like underwater scenes, and it has different fish. Like, they have a carp, they have walleye, they have bass, they have redfish for the saltwater guy. So it's really cool pattern. And you know what? Maybe if you're, you can secondary it when you're out duck hunting or something like that. It's camouflaged enough. That, you know, it'd be good in the boat. Also, maybe you're in a kayak and that, and you're trying to keep your profile low, you're trying to keep, you know, your color, you're not wearing a bright shirt, you don't need a bright tackle bag to spook the fish. That's where that fish flash comes in handy, too.
Now, speaking with David A. Rose here, wildfishing.com, he's a guide and outdoor writer and good friend of ours here on the show on Wild Michigan. I guess I'm trying to figure out, you said bright colors, which really triggered something in my mind. When it comes to fishing, let's talk a little bit about apparel real quick. I know, again, I'm kind of squirreling on things right now, but I've seen a lot of things from certain manufacturers come across. I mean, these are fishing shirts that are really bright colored. Conducive?
Yeah, not always the best idea. Not always the best option. Sure, they look great in photographs, you know, whatever. Or, you know, go out with your bride after fishing and you got a nice, you know, shirt on or something like that. But really, when you are fishing, doesn't matter if you're shore fishing, you're brook trout fishing in the creek, you're in a boat, you know, you want some colors that are pretty neutral. I was just watching a fishing video the other day, and the guy really talked about when he was musky fishing, he noticed his hookups by the boat doubled when he wore blue or gray shirts, and they showed some underwater looking up. You know, the guy was almost invisible in this boat, whereas the guy next to him was in bright yellow, and he stood out like a sore thumb.
You know, I can see that, too. It's like with Scentlock and their Vertigo. You know, it has this breakup with some brighter, wider patterns. You know what? Up, there's light that comes through the trees.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's, you know, just all you got to do is look up sometimes, and you'll really get a different perspective on the world.
David A. Rose is our guest here, fishing guide and outdoor writer, wildfishing.com, and our website, wildmichiganradio.com. You can find him on the Meet the Experts tab. Steelhead coming around your area. We've been seeing some guys fishing. What do you think the initial go-to or at least basic setup will be when it comes to steelhead for this spring?
Well, we're going to have some fast waters. I think fly anglers who are using you know, nymphs and stuff like that, that have a little, speaking of bright color, a little brighter color to them, because we're going to have some runoff, a lot of snow still to melt and stuff like that. So, you know, bottom bouncing with flies and whatnot, or large spawn bags in brightly colored netting, I think that's going to be one of the go-tos this year just because of water clarity.
You know, and I've noticed some of the things, too. The Grand River by my house, up really high, but the clarity is awesome right now. Just really, really nice. And I'm getting a little upset that I haven't gone steelhead fishing yet. But I think this is the fuel I need.
Yeah, there you go. I mean, if you can see it, just step out there and get fishing. And you're as bad as I am. You know, when you get into this stuff professionally, unfortunately, you sometimes talk more about it than do it sometimes. So
yeah,
you just have to take that time.
Exactly. Well, David A. Rose, I really appreciate your time. As always, you can find him at wildfishing.com. And I am now on a mission. I need to find stuff. PlanoMolding.com is where you can find probably more stuff than you'll ever need. And that was just for the fishing. I know they do tons in hunting as well. But thanks for complicating my life, David.
Oh, you're welcome. That's my job. Just ask my wife.
Every time. Thank you so much. More coming your way. We're going to talk about planning your food plots for the spring, because spring's coming, believe it or not. Eric Sherwood next here on Wild Michigan. Get down in that Georgia clay and alpine peaks, at the bottom of a real tall cold drink, chilling to some Skinner or some old
hat. Hi, this is Larry Weissen, and you're listening to Wild Michigan with Duran Martinez.
Mm-hmm. Welcome back to Wild Michigan. Duran Martinez, your host on the Wild Michigan Talk Network. Such a fun show today. Doug Roberts, the deer professor, Eddie Salter talking turkey with us. Also, David A. Rose talking a little bit about fishing, a little bit about tackle boxes. And real quickly, want to thank our friends out at Bear Creek Hunt Club down in Adrian, Michigan. My good friend Russ Bartel, Michael Shippa, Tarna the Wonder Dog, Tarna the Wonder Wookie, and myself had a great hunt down in Bear Creek Hunt Club. Rob and Rusty and everybody down there, a fantastic facility. Birds flying. I hit a couple. A good time. And we got a new hunter out in the field, too. And very thankful for that. Thanks to Russ Bartel for putting that together. And again, everybody at Bear Creek, there's a link on our website. Look in the photos, in the hunting photos, and you'll see the pictures from our pheasant hunt down there last weekend. So joining us right now. We're going to talk a little bit about food plots because, again, David A. Rose has got 2 feet of snow up in the Traverse City area. Down here in the Lansing area, we don't have any snow. Things are drying up a little bit. But right now, we can start planning, not planting, planning our food plots. And when we talk food plots, we go to our team agronomist. He doesn't get paid for it, but hell, we have him on the show anyway. Eric Sherwood joining us from Whitetail Select. Eric, how are you?
Very well, Duran. How are you doing?
I'm doing good, man. And, you know, I'm optimistic that maybe by June we'll have spring here in Michigan, especially in northern Michigan. But in all seriousness, we talked a little bit off air. There was a lot of standing corn out there. And there have been problems last year. Like you said, we got some heavy spring rains, caused the planting to go late, and all of a sudden, boom, early winter. So what's happening with that standing corn?
A lot of it will probably be harvested yet this spring, depending on how well it stood and what is left after the deer and turkeys might have gotten after some of it. And it's kind of different as you travel around the state. Certain areas that had more spring rains or terrible weather in the fall have a lot of standing corn. Other areas don't have much. But a lot of that corn will get harvested in the spring and then tilled up and planted to soybeans probably or some other crop this spring. So on another note, I wanted to mention something. And I know a lot of your viewers know this and appreciate it, but for the ones that don't, they need to appreciate how good of a job you do to come up with so many different topics and different people to call in and talk with each and every week. It's just amazing to me how you can cover the great state of Michigan every week with different people all the time.
Dude, I am so humbled. I don't even know what to say. Aside from thank you, I don't know what to say.
Well, I know I just kind of dropped that on you, but
you did.
It's a heck of a job that you do to cover all these different topics every week, and I applaud you for that.
Well, you know, it's a natural curiosity. I'll be honest with you; it's a natural curiosity. It's not a show. It's not a show about me, because there's so much that I have yet to learn. You know, and I think other people. And this is funny that you bring this up because I talked about this with Doug Roberts. The deer professor from Conquest Sense, you know, it can't be about the host because it's a short, boring, self-indulged show when you do it that way.
Sure.
And we all need to learn. And the more we learn, the more we can share, the more we can teach, the more people that will have more success in the outdoors. And look, like everybody else, I'm driving around, I'm seeing standing corn, I'm going, are we going to be able to do anything with that? You know, is it going to rot? Is it going to mold? Is it going to be, you know, be able to be harvested? And this is why we bring you on here, because this is your field of expertise.
Well, and if you want to talk about that, I can talk about this kind of stuff for hours and bore you to death with it. But the natural maturing process of corn, that ear will, that stands upright, will drop down and tip down, and then that husk kind of forms a little roof over top of that corn cob, and it sheds the water off that way. So generally speaking, if you take the corn that's standing there all winter long and you go out and harvest it this spring, some of it will be a little bit moldy, but it really won't be in that bad of shape, believe it or not. The problem is a lot of it tips over and falls down from the heavy snows that we had or rain with ice. You know, your tree limbs couldn't even handle the ice storms that we had several times through the winter. So there's, you know, you lose a very high percentage of the corn is laying down on the ground where you can't pick it up with a combine or any kind of a harvester. But what is still left standing out there that the deer haven't eaten is pretty good quality corn, and the farmers will probably try and get that this spring. But the good thing about it from the outdoors is the deer and turkeys that were in the neighborhood with standing corn had plenty of good food all winter.
Yeah, it is. Speaking with Eric Sherwood here from Whitetail Select on our show, Wild Michigan. It's a decent food source to keep them through, but come spring, their nutritional needs are going to differ. They're going to change. And this is, aside from keeping deer on our land, if we have land, or if we have land that we lease, there's a lot of nutritional value to food plots, because corn will just sustain them, but they need good green nutrition coming spring.
That is very true. The corn is actually a really good food source in the fall and winter. Corn is really high in starches, and the starches convert to sugars, and that means energy. And when it's cold, you need the energy to keep warm. So deer, when you get to late fall or winter, will instinctively gravitate towards those high energy food sources. Once you get to spring, they're trying to replenish their body, muscle, and fat reserves, and the does are having babies, and then they want to lactate. The bucks are starting to grow their antlers, and they instinctively will go towards higher protein food sources instead of higher energy food sources, which will be your carbohydrates and sugars. So the higher protein would be your alfalfas, clovers, things like that. And that's one thing Mother Nature doesn't provide really well in the early spring, because grass, when it first greens up, is somewhat attractive to the deer, but it's very low in protein. And your new growth of everything in the woods, your beech and maples and witch hazels and all of your browse that deer normally eat in the woods, is also low in protein, anywhere from 4 to 8% protein. But clover can be 16%, 17%, 18% digestible protein, which is good for that antler development and your does when they're lactating in the spring. So that's where food plots is from a sustainability and an antler deer growth and herd health is a great thing to have your perennial clover or alfalfa plots out there.
And it's, again, too, it's not just beneficial to deer, all species for cover for food sources. You know, you talked about the starch converting to sugar and whatnot in deer. It's great for the furnace. Come summer, we don't need the furnace. We need protein. We need something to build our body up towards the fall. The fall is when the bucks are going to lose a lot of their, you know, mass, their body by chasing does. I mean, it's that never-ending cycle, and being able to help them with that cycle, again, helping the herd, helping sustainability and health, and it's not just about us getting antlers.
Right, that's the side benefit. Obviously, the attraction, bringing the deer to your property and being able to hunt, is probably the main reason why most of us do that, but the sustainability is the biggest benefit to the outdoors. And yeah, you explained it very well, Durant.
Speaking with Eric Sherwood here, his website, getoutdoorshunting.com, that's where you can reach Whitetail Select, among other things that Eric has going on. Eric, hang on the line if you don't mind, because I got a whole other segment. We want to talk about planning for the food plot. Before we get to the planning stage, with a team, planting, we have to plan first. And we're going to do that. We're going to find out how to get you soil samples to get them tested, to find out how the pH, how we can, you know, balance the pH for optimum growth here. And we'll talk about different soil properties and different seed types to fit our soil properties. So much learning going on here on Wild Michigan. Eric Sherwood is joining us right now. He is one of our experts. You can find him on our website, wildmichiganradio.com, on the Michigan Talk Network.
One song to sing. A wise man told me there's something you should know. The way you judge a man is you look into his soul. And you'll soon see everything.
To everyone that has served this great country, keeping us free to enjoy the great outdoors, thank you. From Duran Martinez and Team Wild Michigan.
I'm just trying to be a father, raise a daughter and a son, be a lover to their mother, everything to everyone.
Welcome back to Wild Michigan. Duran Martinez, your host on the Michigan Talk Network, brought to you in part by Scentlock, Lucky Buck, and the Sportsman Triathlon and Ironman Challenge going on June 21st and 22nd up in the UP Marquette, Nagani area. Going to be a huge time. You can find them on our Facebook page. Find a link to them on our website, wildmichiganradio.com, the new website, all built up, ever-changing. Lots of great things on there. And a person you can find on our Meet the Experts page is Eric Sherwood with Whitetail Select. Eric, planning our food plots. Let's just say we actually have land, or we have land that we lease and we manage, or we have a friend that, you know, that wants to get food plots in. Probably one of the most basic overlooked things, and we've talked about this in the past, we'll talk about it now, is balancing the pH in your soil. And it all starts with a little bag and a little clump of dirt that we can send off to you or our local, you know, grain elevator to get it tested.
Yes.
And when we test these soil samples, do we take one? Do we take one in different areas? I mean, soil will vary throughout the area, I guess.
Yeah. What I do this time of year is an excellent time of year to be out in the woods. Because you've got no leaves on the trees, you've got, you know, the grass and the weeds have been matted down from the snow, and you've got deer trails that the deer have been traveling through the winter, fall and winter, and it's just a great time to be able to see things that are going on in the woods, where a lot of guys wait until August or September to walk out in the woods, and you can't really see very much at all if you've got much for brush or undergrowth. But you can get out there right now, and if you've got an area in mind, you think you want to do a food plot in, or an area that's been a food plot for the past several years, and you want to do a soil sample, it's real simple. You get a small bucket and a little garden spade or a shovel, and you go to 5 or 6 or 8 spots in that area and dig up the top 3 or 4 inches and put a sliver of that soil in the bucket. And you do that several times in the area, and you stir all that together, and that gives you a good composite sample of what that whole area is like. Instead of just digging up one spot, and that'll tell you what that one area is, but if other areas in the food plot are different soil types or require something different, averaging that together is always best. And then you take about a pint of that soil, and you put it in a little brown paper bag or a sandwich bag. You need somewhere around a pint of soil. And you label that Durand's middle plot or Durand's north or however you want to label it and send it off to me, or you take it to a local grain elevator fertilizer plant extension office and get that sent in. It's extremely important, because if you do all the effort of spraying Roundup and killing the grass off and tilling and planting, and you go through everything that you can do, but you don't do the soil test and your pH is low, whatever you plant's not going to grow very good, and if it's not growing good, it's probably not going to taste very good, and if it doesn't taste very good, it doesn't attract the deer very well or feed them very well, and you get 40 or 50 or 60% of the results that you could have gotten if you just do that one step of the soil test and make sure you've got all the lime and fertilizer correct in the soil.
You know, it's important. This isn't like human beings, where it looks good on the plate, it automatically tastes good. Deer don't care what it looks like. It's got to have that taste. It's got to have the sustaining energy that they're going to need to build their body throughout the year. And it's kind of funny, you know, that it may look, hey, that's green, it looks good, it's growing. Well, no, not so much.
Yeah, deer are very, very instinctive. And if you've got a poorly growing food plot, it's kind of like a garden that you don't fertilize or treat very well, and the garden has, you know, sparse fruit and it's kind of yellow and not growing good. Well, you're not gonna pick that, or you wouldn't buy it if it was on the produce department at the grocery store either. So you treat your garden really well. Well, if you do the same with your food plot, the deer are gonna instinctively know that and definitely feed on it a lot better and it'll grow more. There's just so many different benefits from it. It's one of those steps. I always say it's kind of like a puzzle, and when you get a puzzle with almost all the pieces into it, you know what it looks like, but if you only do half the pieces, you just can't expect very good results.
Now, Eric Sherwood joins us here from Whitetail Select. There's a link on our website, wildmichiganradio.com, to getoutdoorshunting.com, where you can see all of Eric's products. Let's talk a little bit about specifics. Once we have our pH balanced, we've managed to get that come up, and it's actually planting time. There are different types of soil, or we may see different types of weather that will affect our soil. Let's talk about products like Infinity. Let's start with that.
Yeah, basically you've got two choices. You've got annuals and perennials. And the perennials will keep coming back year after year after year. Those are your clovers and alfalfas and chicory and a few other things. Your annuals, obviously you get to replant those every year. And annuals can be really attractive in a certain growth stage or a certain time of the year, and they're usually planted to hunt over. And perennials, if you get the right ones, like our Infinity product, are just as good or better for attraction in the fall to hunt over, but you've got year-round attraction, year-round sustainability, high protein in the spring, and obviously you don't have to replant it every year. So that's some of the most popular ones is the perennials. And generally speaking, you should have at least 50% of your food plots or more should be perennials from that spring and summer attraction and high protein thing that we talked about earlier.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of guys just go with 100%. And if you get the right perennials, they're just as attractive in the fall and really good for the deer in the spring and summer. So the perennials are definitely the way to go. But on the other hand, how that relates to the soil sampling and preparation, the perennials don't grow very good if your pH is really low. If they don't grow good, they don't taste good, and they don't last as long or produce as much. So, but in selecting what you want to plant, keep that in mind, that 50% or more should always be perennials, and even up to 100% isn't the wrong thing to do either.
And with perennials, speaking with Eric Sherwood from Whitetail Select here in Wild Michigan, talking about planning your food plots, we've got to the planting stage, and we're planting. Now let's talk about the maintenance of your perennials. This is something that actually has to be maintained to a degree. It's not so much, pardon the Ron Popeil phrase, set it and forget it.
Right. Well, you can do that, but here's what will happen. You go through all these steps to get it planted. You do the soil test, you spray Roundup, you fertilize and lime accordingly and plant it. But the good thing about perennials, you don't have to do that every year. The next year, it grows right back and looks great, and you don't have to do all those steps. But what you do need to do is mow it two or three times a year, and you'll have a few weeds that'll come in every year, especially in the spring. When you mow it, the clovers will grow back faster than the weeds and choke most of the weeds out. So after mowing it a couple of times, you normally will have like a magazine-looking food plot. It'll be a picture-perfect, beautiful plot. But if you don't mow it, your weeds and grasses will get established and slowly start to take over your plot. So mowing it two or three times a year and usually putting a little bit of maintenance fertilizer on every year will keep that food plot healthy and make it last for 4 or 5 or 6 or 8 years. If you don't do the maintenance on it after 2 or 3 years, slowly your grass and weeds will start to take over, and you'll have half of a food plot left after 3 years.
Speaking with Eric Sherwood here from Whitetail Select, got a couple of minutes left in this segment, Eric. Not all of Michigan is perfect, beautiful soil like southern Michigan is. You have places on the east side of the state, west side of the state, some of our shoreline areas, should we maintain food plots there. Bit more sandy, something that the water's going to run through, and maybe this is where we use the severe?
Yes. Real sandy soils that don't hold water. The severe perennial that I've got is a great perennial. It'll last 10 or 15 years. The only task is getting it established on those sandy soils, but it's made up of all very drought-tolerant forages that only need 6 or 8 or 9 inches of rainfall a year to survive, that come from Russia, Siberia, the Middle East, and the western states in our country. But they're very attractive. They'll live a long time. And especially in those sandy soil, I kind of made it specifically for Michigan, and I sell a fair amount in Wisconsin as well, where we have a lot of sandy soil. And I always tell everyone that the good soil, most of it had the trees pulled out of it 100 years ago, and we're farming it, and we're left with the bad soil in the woods, and a lot of that is sandy soil. So it fits into Michigan quite well.
You know, the reason people, we have Eric on, he's a certified agronomist, Whitetail Select is his product. And the reason we have Eric on, aside from the obvious education purposes, is because we use the product. We've used it year in, year out, maintained it. And I think it's time to replant, because it was a tough year last year, and maybe we need to redo a few things. And I know we're going to do that. So, and then maybe add some more to some different locations. But we do use the product, and we do believe in it. And he is a Michigan company. And essentially, that's why we do it. But Eric, I appreciate you joining us and sharing your information again. Go to getoutdoorshunting.com or go to our website, wildmichiganradio.com. Find Eric Sherwood on Meet the Experts. Thanks to all our great guests. Pick up the podcast, wildmichiganradio.com. This is Wild Michigan on the Michigan Talk Network.